This is the Medicast, June 27th, 2011.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medicast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome all of you to the program this week. A lot of good stuff coming up in this episode with some good news items and our tip of the week segment. And I just wanted to thank all of you for checking out the show. If you haven't already done so and need more information or just want to check out some of the other articles and information available on the Medicast site, head over to medicast.com/blog. When you get to the Medicast blog, you'll find a link for the show notes right there at the top of the page. Go ahead and click that link and you'll find all the information, links to the news items, links to additional resources provided there for you when you follow up on the show. If you'd like to get the information emailed to you, you can sign up for our email newsletter. That's available over there as well. Just your name and email address, and we'll go ahead and add you to that. And you can get those links and things sent to you every week there as well. I also want to always thank you all for getting back in touch with me. Send those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. You can also leave a comment over directly on the articles and posts on the website. And it's just great to hear from you. And in fact, we have coming up here in a little bit a voicemail from someone who called in on the voicemail line at 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. We'll have some more contact information, ways to catch up with me later on at the end of the show, but we want to get into the meat of the show here, so without too much further ado, let's jump in and just follow up on some few listener contacts we had this week. Just a few quick emails and contacts that came in, and one of those was information, an email I got from Ron Davis, who is, of course, one of the co-hosts over at EMS Confessions of an EMS Newbie at confessionsofanemsnewbie.com. And he and Kelly Grayson have a great podcast over there following Ron in his progression through EMT and now through paramedic class. And Kelly and Ron hosted a contest recently to have somebody write an article, an essay on their confessions of an EMS newbie from their perspective. So new EMS professionals out there. And the winner of the contest will actually win a free trip to EMS World Expo in Las Vegas at the end of August. So it's kind of exciting. I'm one of the guest judges and I'm going to be reading some of those essays. We'll have already read some of those essays by the time you get this. We're pre-recording this particular segment. But did want to let you know that that's out there. If you haven't checked out their website or their podcast, I would urge you to check in with Ron and Kelly. They have a great show, and it's always great to hear from both of them. I'm looking forward to actually meeting Ron in person for the first time coming up here in Vegas. Hopefully he's going to be there, and we're looking forward to having Ron come in and do an episode of Confessions of an EMS Newbie from EMS World Expo. So we're crossing our fingers, and hopefully he and Kelly will be available to do that while we're there in the ProMed podcast booth. And that should be all finalized here soon, so we'll have more details on that coming up, so stay tuned. So I also wanted to touch base. We had a call-in from one of the listeners, and she's a brand-new certified EMS professional and brand-new listener to the show and was catching the show and just checking in. Unfortunately, she didn't leave her name. She gave me her email address at the end, but I hadn't had a chance to contact her since I got the message, and I wanted to go ahead and record this show. So it's okay you didn't leave your name, but I'd love to hear from you, and thank you very much in advance. I already listened to it, but your great comments here. And if you want to call in on the voicemail line, you can do so as well. Call in on the voicemail line at 941-306-3342, 941-306-3342, 3-MEDIC, and let's go ahead and check that voicemail out right now.
Hi, I just wanted to call and say that I am a new listener, and I just wanted to let you know that I definitely appreciate all you do with the podcast. I am newly certified within the last 30 days and waiting to get onto a volley service and hopefully get onto a paid service within the next 6 months. And so in the downtime, it's been great to listen to the podcast, so I don't feel that I'm losing anything. So I just wanted to say, you know, keep up the fantastic work, and it's been a major help.
And she goes ahead to leave her email address there. I do want to thank you very much for taking the time to call in. And again, it's great to hear from you. I hope the rest of you are also having a positive experience with the show. You know, I do this show and hope that some of you are soaking up some of this information. So it's always good to hear back from somebody saying, hey, thanks a lot. So I appreciate that. And if you want to call in again, you can call in on the voicemail line too and leave your thoughts. And of course, do what she did. Leave your email address at the end in case I need to contact you or touch base with you again. And you can call in on that line. It's 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC, or leave a comment over on the website or email me, podmedic@mac.com. If you leave a comment over on the website, that emails me too. So any way you catch up with me, I will get back to you. And if you leave a voicemail, maybe I can play your voicemail here on the show. That's it. We're going to jump into the news in our next segment, coming up right after this. This week's news item kicks off with another story. Seems like periodically every year I revisit something going on down in D.C. EMS. And Washington, D.C. EMS has been plagued with a series of problems, medical directors coming and going, problems maintaining adequate staffing levels. I think, you know, it is getting better based on the fact that I seem to see fewer articles from DC EMS, but they're still having some issues, and a lot of inner city EMS are going to have some issues over the summer as heat and temperatures rise, and inner cities tend to just focus that. All that concrete and stuff just rises temperatures much faster. And if you have ambulances that don't have air conditioning, you could run into a problem. This past heat wave that just hit earlier in the month, DC had a patient that was in the back of an ambulance where the internal temperature in that patient care compartment was clocked at 107 degrees. In fact, a health department inspector came by, checked out the ambulance, and put it out of service. But because of call volume, and battalion chief with the DC Fire Department went ahead and put the ambulance back in service because of the number of patient calls that were coming in. This is a challenge, and they kind of went back and forth over who's in charge of the ambulances here. It is an issue, especially when the majority of our patients are elderly patients, for the most part. They are much more at risk for heat problems. If you're not sure about what that means, go back and check out episodes from last summer on heat-related injuries. We may have to cover that in an upcoming episode again as well. It's just one of those things that doesn't hurt to revisit, but it is important for you to make sure that if your ambulance isn't in proper working order, that you take some kind of steps to do something to moderate the temperature in the patient care department. If you've got an AC inverter on your unit that is is turning power into something that can be plugged into the wall, heck, even putting some kind of a fan next to any kind of open window just to move some air around may be an option. You can get a fan at the dollar store for, you know, $5-$10. Something that will help move air around is really just anything that can improve your patient care experience. So it's something to keep in mind. I point this out because it's just something that came up in the article, and it is pointing out that this is happening in D.C., and certainly, there's an issue there with how they've been dealing with the health department, and the health department's been dealing with them over the last several years. That's part of the issues that they're having there. But it does point out these are things we're going to see more and more frequently. How do you handle increased call volume during a heat wave when a lot of people are experiencing heat-related problems to putting ambulances back in service that were taken out of service because they don't have air conditioning? You have to trade off here. Maybe there's another option. Maybe some of these patients can be transported in a vehicle that's not an ambulance. Maybe some of these patients can be provided other resources. You know, in that situation, you could make an argument to say it's a mass casualty incident. And with mass casualty incidents, you can throw out some of your more common situational protocols to deal with specific situations. And it might mean that, hey, I can put some of these patients that are, you know, just experiencing some heat problems, they can sit in the upright in a seat of a normal vehicle, maybe transported in a supervisor's vehicle to the hospital where they can wait in the waiting room. These are things that you need to start thinking outside of the box. We don't have to transport patients in an ambulance every single time. And we need to get out of that mindset. We're so locked in that we miss the opportunity to provide care in a different way. So it's interesting, and I would urge you to check this out, and also urge you to remember to check out your summertime protocols, those things that happen only or more frequently in the summertime, like heat-related emergencies. What do you or can you do to effectively cool a patient down? How do you recognize the various types of heat-related emergencies and different levels of heat inflicted illnesses? So let's go ahead and you'll take care of that, I know, on your own side. And we'll jump into the next story. On a similar note, when we talk about heat-related emergencies, we can also talk about sun-related emergencies. And sun exposure is something that is a problem for everyone, but it's really a risk for infants. Babies can be much more susceptible to permanent damage to their skin from exposure to the sun, and even short exposures, what you might not consider as be that much of a problem, of 15 or 20 minutes, can cause some permanent damage for any child less than the age of 2. A recent study that was released on the effects of skin damage in infants points out that babies, toddlers, have skin that is less developed than adult skin. It has less layers and therefore has fewer layers of that protection that adults might have when they need to get protected from the sun. So as we are outside more and more, it's really important to cover up younger children and really everybody with the appropriate sunblock for that person. I would suggest to you that it wouldn't be a bad idea to get a bottle of baby or children's sunblock, both even, throw it in the back of your unit and have it there for those times when you go to festivals, do local events, or just are out tooling around and stopping. If you see someone out with a child and you are talking with them, you can just bring up, hey, you know, sunblock, you have sunblock, it's really bright out today. And recent studies have shown even 15 or 20 minutes of exposure can cause some permanent damage to a child's skin. Why don't you, I have some sunblock in the ambulance if you'd like to just put some on her while we're here. This is something that takes 2 minutes to do, provides a great public service, and prevents a long-term problem for a patient that you might not ordinarily think about. So I just urge you to keep this in mind. Sunblock is really important. And I'm religious about it. Heck, I don't burn, I freckle, and I'm just fair-haired. Too many redheads in my family. So I just stay away from the sun. You see me at the beach. I'm the guy under the umbrella, all pulled up in the shadow of shade of the umbrella, and I still get a reflective sun. I still get reflective sunburn off of the sun bouncing off the sand. So, even with sunblock on, I tend to burn. But this is something that you need to be more and more aware of, and you really need to take it seriously. So I just urge you to keep this in mind. It's a great way to reach out to your patients and provide an additional way to take care of them just by having some sunscreen around in your unit that makes it available for the people that, you know, might be a patient 80 years from now, but they're going to need your help now so they can get to that 80-year mark, because they die from skin cancer from overexposure at the age of 2, and they end up dying of skin cancer at the age of 30, when you could have just given them a little bit of sunscreen for mom and dad to put on, that would have been all it would have taken. So I just want to keep that in mind, and it's a great way to reach out to your public. Finally, we've been talking about documentation over the last several weeks here on the MedicCast. We had Chris Kaiser on to talk about it in a two-part episode interview where we talked about some real good tricks to improve narrative writing. And just kind of this news article popped out and pointed out to me that it's something that you might want to keep in mind. Recently over at emsworld.com, Shal Tramashir, which is one of their authors and columnists over there, wrote an article called "Stuff I Wish They'd Taught Me in Class, Own Up to Your Mistakes." This is one of those things that is part of documentation. We didn't talk about it a whole lot with Chris, but it is something you need to keep in mind, owning up to your mistakes. When you make a mistake, an error, whether it's an error in judgment or an error in misplacement, you know, you miswrote a medication, you drew up. You drew up a medication in an inappropriate fashion. You gave patients the wrong medication. Any of these things can cause a lot of issues, and you need to report it. You need to be honest about it. Why? Well, you can't just assume that you're going to get fired, but I can guarantee you, you're going to be severely punished if you don't own up to it and you get caught. So if you make a mistake, hey, things happen. The hectic pace in the back of an ambulance can make it real easy to cause an error to occur. If an error occurs, you need to report that an error occurred, whether it's something associated with you. In this particular article, she talks about going ahead and trying a fourth IV stick when she was only allowed to do three, and she still failed to get the IV. This is seems like a silly thing to not be upfront and straightforward about, and in fact, when she ended up owning up to it after she initially said she didn't try a fourth attempt, she ended up being disciplined. But she didn't lose her job, and she learned a valuable lesson. You need to make sure that you let folks know when you gave somebody the wrong med, when you made an inappropriate application of a splint, or whatever the case may be. You need to make sure that you're square with people on how you did it. And this is important because it affects patient care, but it also affects how you're viewed by other medical professionals. Now, this isn't because you're going to be viewed as having made a mistake, therefore you're less equipped to be a good medical professional than the next person. In fact, someone who quickly and accurately owns up to making an error is the person that I think of as a much better medical professional, because they're going to be honest and upfront, and we're going to have a better opportunity to impact and improve patient care because of that honesty and that straightforward approach. So keep these things in mind. I would go and read this article. Now, I always tell you, hey, the links are in the show notes, but this is one of those links you need to go over to the show notes for this episode, and you need to follow the link to this particular article at emsworld.com. It is an excellent look at a lesson learned because of failure to report an error. And I think that it's vital for you to understand and internalize this. You don't get anywhere by covering things up. As I tell my teenage kids, I don't care what happens. Every time you lie, you are going to get caught. It may not be right away. It may not be next week, but it's going to happen. You're going to get caught in the lie. And eventually it catches up with all of us. So you need to be having that same focus, and you need to give your patients and your coworkers the respect to make sure that you're straightforward and honest in everything you do in the workplace. And I hope you take this to light, and I really urge you to read that particular article in the show notes. If you have any comments or you'd like to share back some thoughts about this or any of the other news items, send those emails in, podmedic@mac.com, or call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. And we'll get on into our tip segment coming right up. Time to jump into this week's tip of the week. And this week's tip, we're going to continue our documentation theme. So the last two weeks, we've had those two parts of the interview segment with Chris Kaiser talking about his six tips for improving your narrative writing skills. But what if you're just getting started? Or what if you have a system that requires you to write in two different notation or narrative styles? So I thought it would be a good, just basic overview to talk about documentation in general and to talk a little bit about the different styles of documentation that are out there, at least some of the basic styles and templates that might be used in your service. So without further ado, let's jump into that tip segment. In this tip of the week this week, we're going to be jumping in and talking about narrative documentation. Now, over the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about this. We had the two-part interview segment with Chris Kaiser from lifeunderthelights.com. And after talking with Chris, and that interview segment was great, I thought it would just be good to just boil some of those thoughts down and some of the basic ideas surrounding EMS documentation, including some of the documentation styles that are out there. There's some formats, templates, and styles that are available depending on where you are, you may be asked to write in any one of them. And for a lot of us, you know, if you in the EMS sector, you may be working for more than one specific service. You might be working for a local public 911 service and then doing inter-facility transport for a private ambulance company on the weekends. That's something that, you know, we need to keep an eye on, and you might have different narrative styles required in both locations. So let's we're going to talk about that and review some of those things. Let's talk a little bit about EMS narrative writing. Now, a lot of people are using an electronic narrative format now. I think it's just because of the mobile nature of what we do. We've moved to electronic report writing a lot quicker than the rest of the healthcare setting had, but it still has some misconceptions associated with it. We talked about some of that with Chris last week and the week before, but it just points, I just want to point out that there's some things that are really good about that electronic reporting is really good at, and there's some things that electronic reporting by itself is not good at. And so you have to supplement what you have in that data report with some sort of narrative. We're going to talk also about narrative style. We'll talk about some of the various styles like ADP, DAR, and SOAP notes, and that'll all be coming up here later in this tip segment. Let's talk about those common misconceptions about electronic and written PCRs. You actually may be transitioning from what you've been using electronic to a different electronic report as your local healthcare system or hospital system changes to an electronic report format. And you might be moving to something that's more compatible with what they're using. That's something to keep in mind and something to be aware that you might have to change some of your styles. You also need to understand that just because you're entering data into that report doesn't mean you don't have to write a narrative anymore. You need to understand that electronic reports are great at capturing some raw data, those little checkboxes and capturing of vital signs and a picture of the patient with in numbers at any given moment is great, but your narrative needs to paint the picture of what's going on between those discrete data points. If you're taking vitals every 5 minutes, what's going on with that patient between those 5 minute segments of time? Because you need to understand what's changed. You can see that some aspect of the vital signs has changed in 5 minutes, but what caused that change? What happened in that 5 minute time frame? Did the patient respond to a medication or a treatment? Did they have an adverse reaction or a side effect? All of those things need to be documented. Written reports are great at capturing interactions between you and the patient. So capturing the patient's feelings, the patient's response to a specific question, setting the stage and the tone for what is going on during the call. It paints that picture, and I know Chris talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I do as well, and it is just important for you to do your good narrative report along with your electronic report so that it is attached and paints that picture for you. You need both of those things. Narrative style is really the basic style, and everything else is a template or a version of a narrative style. But the straight narrative style is often just chronologically documenting what you did and in what order you did it. It's in a paragraph format. It is, again, needed to paint that picture, and a template will help you write a better narrative. Now, there are templates that we're going to talk about later on, but even just taking a well-written narrative, chronological narrative, and then basically pasting it into the next patient care report and changing all the data to represent the new patient so that it paints the picture for the second call. You don't just, you know, copy and paste and leave it the same. You need to go in there and change things, but at least by reading through it, you will not miss any pertinent parts of your assessment of your treatment plan because you've got that narrative template to work from. And then you just go through and fill in the blanks. So that's important. And practice makes perfect. The more you write narratives, the better your narratives will get. So make sure that you understand that when you write this narrative, that you are thinking about what worked in the past and what you've done in the past. And you'll find that, you know, your 10th narrative will go a lot faster than your first narrative. And that it's more concise, it's better written, and your 20th narrative will be better still. So this is one of those things that if you need practice, go open your paramedic or EMT textbook and pull out those patient scenarios that they have in every chapter to kind of set you up for the whatever they're discussing that chapter. Write a report about what you read in that patient care report, okay? That's basically, you know, that's what that article, that section of the textbook is doing. It's writing a narrative about what happened. Write it from your point of view as the provider and see if you can flesh out the details in that call and write 10 of those. If you need to improve your narrative skills, have somebody proofread them, read them back to you. Do they make sense? Do they report on anything? Is there anything they feel like you left out? Now, it may be information that wasn't in those sample patients, but at least you'll get a sense of what your writing style is like. And that's a good way to practice. Let's look at some of the templates that you can lay over a narrative style that have some functionality. ADP is an acronym that comes from my nursing background. I've seen it used in the EMS sector too, and it really is just taking the chronological treatment process and breaking it down into discrete parts. So in ADP, you have assess, diagnose, plan, implement, and evaluate, or evaluate could also be reassess, right? So you've got template for your narrative. You can use this and say, all right, when you get to the scene, what did you see? What did you assess? What does the scene look like? What's going on with the patient? You do your sample history and fill in all those details there. That all happens in the assessment section. You then go on and write your diagnosis section. Is this patient critical? Does it require a specialty care center? Do you need to divert to a trauma or burn center? Do you need to call for additional resources? What's going on with this patient specifically? Your diagnosis and your plan for that patient moves in next with treatment plan, where you're specifically saying, all right, for this patient, we started our ACLS protocols for bradycardia. Patient was bradycardic and symptomatic, and we went ahead and began to pace this patient. You can go through the whole process by writing all that information out. You implement the plan. What did you do? You're pacing this patient. Well, we administered morphine for pain because the patient was uncomfortable, and that seemed to take the edge off the pacing spikes. You're going to go ahead and talk about that there. You're then going to evaluate. And this is in the EMS sector, evaluate is reassess. We do that secondary assessment, that reassessment of our patient. How did our interventions work? Do we need to do something else? If pacing didn't capture, what do we need to do next? Or if we've lost capture, what do we need to do next? Everything that happens, you just go back to the top of the list and start over again. So that evaluate becomes a continuous reassessment of this patient. You want to make sure that this is a good organizational tool, but it may not be good for documenting during the call. When we write, I know a lot of times in EMS calls, people will document a little bit as they go because they've got to track this information during the call. It's just us and the patient. We're sitting right there with them. We can document as we go. ADP may not be a good way to document when you're writing your narrative during the course of the call. It's great for after the fact to organize your thoughts. So it just may be useful in different ways. You may find that this works for you during the call, but I have found for me that it just doesn't seem to be the best tool. DAR. This is great for a short response, short information. Say you have a mass casualty incident and you performed a variety of short interventions on a variety of patients. This might be a perfect note for that. It stands for data, action, and response. And for those short notes, it's really great because you basically say, what did the patient need or want? What did the patient present with? What were your assessment findings? Action. What did you do? So, you know, and this is why it's great for those short patient interactions you might find on a mass casualty incident. Perhaps if you're working some kind of a fair or an outdoor event where you're just doing brief treatments of patients, you know, you put a Band-Aid on a kid's scraped knee, you gave somebody some bottled water when they were overheated and dehydrated and sat and monitored them. You know, that's not something that requires a full-blown incident report, but you do need to make a note of it. So it may be appropriate to make a DAR note for this type of situation. And of course, the R is response. You want to reevaluate your patient whenever you do anything to them. So what happened after you implemented your plan? You know, you went and did your action. What was the patient's response to that action? Finally, soap notes. And, you know, Chris talked about this. I've done soap notes. Everybody, I think, you know, it seems great tool for teachers to inflict upon their students. But I think it's important to point out that soap notes are a great organizational tool, and they actually work really well in putting down information in a chronological setting where we are documenting things over the course of an ambulance call. And so soap notes can be very effective in documenting during a call. Now, this stands for subjective, objective, assessment, and plan. And sometimes you'll add an IE. So sometimes it's a SOAPIE note. Okay, SOAPIE, and that stands for implement and evaluate. Although a lot of people just put implement and evaluate under the treatment plan section, where all that treatment plan information goes there. Subjective refers to the patient's story, their chief complaint, the history of the present illness. This is all of that information you get as you approach the scene, as you get there and talk to the patient, family members, bystanders, gathering information. Objective is your direct observations and the data you collect from these patients, and it might be vital signs or observations of skin color, diaphoresis, things like that. You assess the patient and formulate a diagnosis. So you gather all the data, the subjective, objective data, and you assess that and come up with a diagnosis specific to your patient's chief complaint. Plan then is all of your treatment plan, your goals for that patient. And you might be doing some education with that patient. You need to tell them what you're doing. So that's all part of it. You know, sometimes I think we miss the boat and we just go up and without even introducing ourselves, start taking someone's vital signs. We need to be doing some education. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why is this medication going to work? What do you expect? You know, I'm giving you some nitroglycerin, sir. I'm going to spray this under your tongue. You might experience a headache. That's a common side effect with this, but it's going to help make your chest pain go away. And we're going to ask them about that. Again, sharing information with the patient is just as important, and it really helps them feel more comfortable giving you information in return. And so this is where you kind of develop that patient-provider bond. Why do we use soap so much? Well, we talked about it a little bit. It's really suitable for charting during the call. So you can have a piece of paper, even a little cheat sheet piece of paper, and write SOAP down the side of one column, one side of the page. And then you can fill in some of the data as it's collected and put it right back in your pocket. So that's why it makes it so suitable. You write it up as you go. It's easy to add to the different sections. And if you have a patient call that's going to be very involved, you might want to have four separate sheets of that little spiral pad, and you put SOAP on every sheet, one on each sheet, and then you fill up a sheet with each section, and you can just flip back and forth when you need to fill it in. When you go to write your report, it's all right there. It's useful for both simple and complex calls because it's so easily expandable. So I think that's why soap is so often focused on in the EMS sector. It's not the only way to do it, but it is one that is commonly taught. And so it is. And the reason for that is not to inflict pain and aggravation on students, although I think sometimes that seems to be the case for some people. It's not actually the reason. We want you to learn this stuff. We want you to internalize it and use it so that you come up with that plan for how you're going to document when you get out in the field for yourself. There's some great resources out there. I refer first off to, of course, back to Chris Kaiser. He wrote his 6 tricks for improving your narratives today. LifeUnderTheLights.com is where you can find Chris's excellent blog with a ton of great resources for EMS professionals, new and experienced. So wherever you are in your EMS profession, I think you're going to find some good stuff over at Chris's blog. And you can find that again at LifeUnderTheLights.com. Also, I found some good articles at GEMS.com and EMSWorld.com. One article I found over at GEMS was called Documentation Basically Very Important, written by a paramedic, Dennis Edgerly. So you can look up that information and search for it over at GEMS.com. Over at EMSWorld.com, a really recent article, The Ways and Whys of Documentation, written by paramedic Christopher Kelly. So again, look that up over at EMSWorld.com and follow up on these resources. There'll be links in the show notes for this episode, so I urge you to follow up on those links and improve your documentation today. And if I not touched on something that maybe you use, share back your comments with me here. I love to hear from you. So you can send an email back to me with what template you use to write documentation. And you'll find all of that information over at the website as well. Or you can just send me an email to podmedic@mac.com or call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medic Cast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions you'd like to share about this week's show, make sure you send them in to us. And you can send those in to us by email, podmedic@mac.com. You can also call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. We had a voicemail earlier in this episode. And also, don't forget, you can always leave comments over on any of the articles or posts over at the MedicCast website. Don't forget also, you can catch up with me under the handle PodMedic on Twitter or Facebook, and that's twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic. So follow me or friend me, whichever the case may be. And if you haven't already done so, check out the MedicCast fan page, and there's 2,500 fans and growing over there, and really a great community and opportunity to discuss and share. I try to post stuff there every day or so, and it's things that don't always make it onto the show or make it into the MedicCast website articles, but might be just a link to an interesting article I found, or somebody else's site, or another podcast, and it's just information you might want to check out. You can respond back and forth to other Facebook professionals. A lot of EMS providers from around the country are fans there, and you might want to do so as well. So check it out, and that's over at facebook.com/MedicCast, and just click the like button at the top of the page. That's it for me. We're going to go ahead and close out the show with some great PodSafe music. I want to wrap up here with a song from Matthew Ebel. We've played his stuff before, and this is one of my favorites of his, and you know you've heard it, Downtown. If you like what you hear, you can check it out yourself at MatthewEbel.com, and that's E-B-E-L, and you'll find his music there. You can also find his songs over in iTunes, and there'll be a link button in the show notes to take you over there and check out his songs in iTunes if you're interested in purchasing one of them. You know, it's a small price to pay to thank Matthew for his support of the MedicCast and other shows out there by sharing his music with you, and it's just something you should do. So check out his music over in iTunes and purchase one or two of his songs, and say thanks to Matt for having his music here on the MedicCast. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again soon with another episode of the MedicCast. In the meantime, please remember, stay safe, and remember, scene safety, BSI. The future past the end of a nose.
nets look a mess, but baby, you better sell, or your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money, but honey, your daddy don't give a damn unless you got a Johnny and you're going.